Before we begin, I just want you guys to know that we're going to be highlighting some really young entrepreneurs across the African continent who are doing some pretty amazing things. So stay tuned.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm your host, Arun Galadima. Let's start the show.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest, Mr. Alex Mativo. Alex is a Kenyan entrepreneur and fashion designer. He is the founder and CEO of eLab, a company aimed at eradicating electric waste in Africa by transforming it into products for the fashion and interior design industry. He's also the recipient of the Queen's Young Leaders Award. Alex, that's a very, very brief introduction, but I'd like you to take the time to let the bandits get to know you a little bit better.
All right, so thank you for having me. My name is Alex Mativo. I'm a Kenyan entrepreneur, but I like to think of myself as a global citizen, just doing good for his community. I run three startups at the moment. One is focused on fashion and the environment, and the rest are focused on creating equal financial opportunities for Africans on the continent.
Okay, that's really interesting. Can you go a little bit more into both of those? So what are you doing with eLab? And then,
Definitely. So I began eLab in 2014 because I come from a place just on the outskirts of Nairobi, and it's an industrial town, so you have all these companies generating what we call electronic waste, and it's a really big environmental hazard. So I began as a small project out of my garage just to create a culture where people safely dispose of the waste. And then over time, it became a business where I'm empowering different communities across Africa to create products for the fashion industry who are addressing waste streams on the continent.
Okay, really cool. So what sort of products are you producing with the from the waste?
All right, so because it was a totally new idea, we experimented with a lot of cool things. We had sculptures, murals, and furniture, and things that we could wear, like earrings and bracelets. But over time, we learned what works, and we realized that there's a global demand for products in the fashion industry. For instance, jewelry is a very big industry. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry that we wanted to tap and also just do something that's totally different. So right now, we currently make products like earrings, bracelets, necklaces, things like cufflinks. So basically any wearable jewelry that can go with any outfit and can actually complement what's already existing in the world.
Okay, nice. And I mean, right off the bat, where can people find the jewelry online?
So we're working with, what we're doing at the moment is we're trying to be more consumer facing. Mm-hmm. Initially, we were a business facing business. So we sold to businesses across the world. Like one in Nigeria called Alara. They buy products from us in bulk, and then we ship to them. And you find that the retailers that buy from us are the ones that are in charge of doing all the marketing and selling to the consumers. But at the moment, 2018, our plan is to build an online marketplace where anyone across the world can actually buy our products directly under a new or rebranded name.
Okay, interesting. So as you expand that way, what are some of the challenges you're facing right now with that? Or what are some of the unique opportunities with that you're noticing right now?
All right, so our biggest motivation or the opportunity that we see is the rise of social media. You find that social media is basically the backbone of consumer engagement. And we want to take advantage of the fact that businesses are now, or rather businesses have have a human face where businesses are now interacting with consumers online. And what it does for a brand is it builds trust among the different consumers. And so the marketplace is going to be based on social media platforms where consumers can directly engage with us, and then we can move from that point.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Okay, well, I mean, it's, you have a lot of really interesting stuff to say, but now we're going to move on to talking about like who you are as an entrepreneur. So what fires you up in the morning? What is your morning routine, and why is that routine so important to you?
All right. What wakes me up in the morning is the idea that we're here for a limited amount of time, and I want to get to 80 years old and not have so much to regret. Mm. So I wake up every morning knowing that I'm doing this for my future self. Mm. My morning routine is I wake up at like 5:30 in the morning, and then I cycle to the gym. I'm really big on fitness. Okay. And then my day begins around 8 o'clock. Mm. Yes.
Nice. And so what's why is that routine so important to you?
So it's a life mantra where I believe that if you start your day feeling good, or if you start your day by doing something that makes you incredibly happy, it's going to translate or trickle down into your entire day. Mm. And I usually make sure that I at least start my day with either friends or hitting the gym. Mm. To just feel amazing.
Nice. Yeah, no, I definitely think that's important. A lot of entrepreneurs have spoken about the importance of working out first thing in the morning, because it gives you this extra energy, this boost for the rest of the day. So I think that's a good way to start it out. And so a big part of being an entrepreneur is passion, but it's also being able to sustain yourself. So what do you do to generate income?
So all my income comes from the ventures that I'm working on at the moment.
Okay.
So basically, with Elab, it's a trade. It's the buying and selling of the products that I have at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's basically my revenue stream.
Nice. And how long did it take you? So you started that in 2014. How long before you were profitable, and how long before it was able to sustain a lifestyle for you?
I think it took over 3 years, basically. So the myth or the misconception is businesses can become profitable within a few months of inception. But the truth is that if you're creating a lot of value, you spend most of your revenue in creating value. And you're only going to get to profitability when you've created so much value. And it takes time.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree. So with Elab, what is the size of that organization? How has it grown since 2014?
So I began with one other person who's a visual artist. And back in 2014, we worked from a garage. But over the years, we've grown. We've grown into a team of more than 8 people who work on the day to day projects. And then we have a really interesting model where most of the people that work for Elab are independent artisans. So okay. We've created jobs for hundreds, if not thousands, of artisans in Kenya.
Mm. Yeah. That's really cool. I like this. We started off saying your motivation, one of your big motivations, is just sort of being this great global citizen. And I'm a firm believer in that, that like, as humans on this earth, it's our job to do something, to leave a mark on the world. I think regardless of how big or small that impact is, we all have a responsibility to do something in the world. So I definitely am seeing flashes of that as we speak, which is cool.
Yeah.
All right. And so you're 23. I'm seeing on your Wikipedia page, you're 23. So that's, I mean, I feel like that's probably the youngest entrepreneur that I've had on Knowledge Bandits.
really?
Yeah.
It's an honor. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. And sometimes, especially in Africa, there might be difficulties being a young person breaking into business. So I just want to get from you, have you experienced any, I guess, challenges just from being so young in the industry?
Yes. Two challenges that come in mind is one, the fact that you grow up in a very isolated or siloed community where you have no one to look up to. And what you do on a daily basis is you try and learn from people that you've never interacted with. Most of my lessons are from entrepreneurs that I see online. And what it does to a person is sometimes you don't get the real picture. It doesn't motivate you enough to know that you can make it. But if I grew up maybe with an entrepreneur that came from the same community as I, success, or rather what I aspire to be, would be much more realistic. And that's one problem that young people in business face. The second one is the fact that living in Africa, there's this misconception where the young people do not really know what they're talking about. So there's much less respect as opposed to maybe first world countries. And what I've done from the beginning was to always do or say the most sensible things so that I can change the narrative. I can show the older generation that there's young people out there who are doing amazing things or have, you know, good interest at heart.
Mm. Yeah, no, I definitely think that's important. I like what you say, what you're saying there is that there's already this misconception that young people don't know enough or that young people might be lazy or anything, but
yeah,
you are sort of being that change. Instead of sitting around complaining about the perception, you're going out there and impacting change so that the older generation can see that the younger generation is very influential.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. And so you've mentioned a few challenges, but we want to go really deep into a challenge. So I know that being an entrepreneur, you face some low points. So I'd like you to take us to one specific low point so we can definitely feel that with you and understand what it was like.
So an entrepreneur, I feel like you go through 10,000 different emotions on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And what it does for you is just it helps you become resilient. But jumping into business is always a risk. And there've been moments where I've reached a really low point. For instance, before we made Generating Sales, I got to a point where I lost my co-founder. Like how do I put this? So my co-founder and I were on different pages regarding the vision of the company, and he left at a really early age it was the time before we raised investment. So you can imagine I'm running the company alone, and I have $0 in my bank account, and it's a time where no one really believes in your vision, and you're the only person that comes or steps forward to try and push that vision forward. And it took a couple of months and incredible support from people who texted me on a daily basis telling me that they believe in me. And the fact that random people on the internet believe in you, you kind of have a responsibility to wake up every morning and just see your vision through. And this is what happens to entrepreneurs that people do not know. So it takes a lot of emotional and physical and mental strain on a person, especially if you're young. But when you bounce back from these moments, you become a stronger person.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice. And so I guess you said you were able to raise some money, but how did being an individual, a single co-founder or a single founder impact your ability to raise money? Did that influence it at all?
It definitely does, because almost all the investors invest in people, and it doesn't really matter how amazing or how cool your idea sounds. At the end of the day, they look at the team behind it. They bet on the team such that if whatever you've pitched is going to fail, they believe that you're always going to find a way, or the team is always going to find a way to come up with something better than what they saw. And yes, so most of the investors walk away from such individual founders. So what I did instead was try and build relationships with different people that I've met over time. And the hardest bit is building a team, and me finding the 6 or 7 individuals that I work with took a lot of time, but I believed it was the greatest investment that I've done. And with that team, I was able to raise capital from different organizations.
Mm. Okay. And I mean, I think this is a very important point for entrepreneurs, is understanding how to raise capital, because it seems like, I mean, from the first page when you're starting out, it seems like, oh, all I need to do is have a good idea and then I'll go out and raise capital. But I'm sure that you've experienced it differently. So can you talk us through that process of trying to raise money and how much to ask for and the things to be thinking about when you're going through that process?
All right. So what I've learned over the years is, again, the point about having a cool idea is never enough. It's usually around maybe 10% of the reason why someone would want to invest. But the other 90% is mostly it's two things. One, you as a person. Like, if I bet my money on you, you know, what kind of person are you? Are you the kind of person who is consistent and is always going to deliver? And then the second thing is basically the implementation of the whole idea. So having a cool idea is cool, but again, the task or the you going out there and actually making it a reality is the hardest thing that you're ever going to do. But it's, again, what investors look for.
Mm.
Yes.
Nice. And so how did you go about figuring out the number you needed to ask for?
So I think on a daily basis, or rather, when you're thinking about your business, there's this goal or there's this place that you want to get to as a company. And then you know that, for instance, maybe you want to get to, let's say, 100,000 consumers in 1 year. So by knowing the numbers or by knowing what your goal is in a certain period of time, you're able to know how much money you need or what budget, what kind of budget you need to get there. And that's how you're able to figure out what you need to ask for.
Mm. Nice. And specifically in Kenya, where would you suggest that entrepreneurs, or what should the process be for entrepreneurs in Kenya trying to raise money? Who should they go to? I guess, because I know in Nigeria, for example, it is difficult to find investors for startups. I guess general advice for people in Africa in terms of trying to raise money, but also specifically for people in Kenya.
So, again, that's very true. In Africa, basically, most of the local investors, or rather, there's a big shortage of local investors.
Mm-hmm.
Willing to invest in early stage companies, and most of the startup founders that I know raise investment from outside the continent.
Mm.
But the best place to start as an entrepreneur in Kenya is identifying where you have the biggest concentrations of entrepreneurs. For instance, in Nairobi, that's the co-working spaces like iHub and other really popular co-working spaces. So what happens in these co-working spaces is that you have all these meetups on a weekly basis, and some of these meetups feature very many investors. And the best way to approach an investor is the informal setup. So if you have an informal rapport with an investor, that keeps the conversation going as opposed to directly jumping into a formal way of interaction.
Hmm.
And that really works.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's very important for people to understand that it doesn't just happen overnight. Being able to raise money is almost, it's like networking. It's an ongoing thing. So if you're thinking about networking, you also need to mm-hmm. portray what sort of value you can give to the investor, you can give to the other person as well. Especially when they're investing money. When they're investing time, the stakes are a little bit less, but when they're investing money, you really need to be able to portray that you are going to be a good investment for them. Because like you said, initially, a lot of the decisions on raising money center around who you are as an individual.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think the best way to kind of portray what value you give or what you come. So this is something that an investor told me the other day. He came to Nairobi from Denmark. He's a really popular philanthropist globally. And he said that the biggest mistake with young entrepreneurs is they don't know how to package themselves in a very brief way. What I mean by this is your first impression or your first statement should always pique his interest.
Mm.
It should find a way to pitch in one sentence at the beginning of every conversation, just to pique everybody's interest.
Nice. And so what is your one liner, your opening sentence?
To be honest, I have a nonverbal pitch.
Okay.
Yeah. So I dress in a certain way.
Hmm.
And that leaves everybody curious. And how most conversations start is them complimenting my dress code, and then I now say that I'm a fashion designer and this is what I do.
Hmm.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's really cool. I think oftentimes people might be stuck in this sort of one track way of thinking, but it's important to be creative and also to have fun as an entrepreneur. Find that doing that makes the work itself a lot easier.
Yes, what it does is actually shortens the conversation.
Nice. And so you spoke a little bit about some of the downtimes that you experienced as an entrepreneur, but now we want to move on to some of the brighter days, the more positive aspect of things. So in your thinking, just in sort of me mentioning that, what is one moment that you can think of where you felt like this is really where you need to be? You felt like everything was just lining up the right way.
I think I remember leaving high school and me wanting to be an engineer, but that didn't really, the thought of that never made me happy. And flash forward 2016, when I was sitting down with the Queen of England, that thought came back to my mind, and I felt really happy for having pursued that one thing that made me really happy. And so my best moments are moments where I realize that I'm actually doing something that makes me happy.
Well, how did that come about where you were sitting down with the Queen?
So it's 20%, or rather 50%, singing Billionaire by Bruno Mars. And then the other 50% is, so basically 50% law of attraction and 50% working really hard towards a goal such that the Queen's Young Leaders Program noticed what I was doing in Kenya. And they notice young leaders across the world just changing their communities, and they celebrate them.
Interesting. And so what was that experience like, not only being able to be with the Queen, but also to be able to interact with other entrepreneurs from across Africa?
It was a surreal moment. And the best moment when I met the other amazing young people from across the world was I realized that sometimes you feel like entrepreneurship is a lonely journey, but I realized that there's other 60 people from across the world who go through the same things that I go through. And that kind of brings you closer to people. It helps you know that you're not alone in just journey, and you always have people out there you can look up to, reach out for support.
Nice. Cool. And, you know, I think that's a perfect segue to get into the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Sure. Let's do this.
All right. What would you say was initially stopping you from taking the step to be an entrepreneur?
Fear that what I want to pursue wouldn't work.
And when did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
It was 2015 when I had a bigger vision. So what happened is I set even bigger goals for myself, and those bigger goals became the business that I'm pushing through every day.
And what is your superpower as an entrepreneur?
Resilience, or rather consistency, such that even if you beat me down, I'm going to wake up, or I'm going to crawl to that battlefield and still fight.
And what would you say is one thing that you want to improve on as an entrepreneur?
There's a lot, but if I was to pick one, I'd say be more bold than I am right now. Just be unapologetic about my ambitions and goals and do even bigger things. Yeah. Mm.
And what's the best advice you've ever received, and who is it from?
It was a video by Mark Zuckerberg. Mm. He said, a lot of us are waiting for the perfect moment to start, but just do it. Start crappy. Start and fail. Mm.
So what are you reading now?
I'm reading Running Lean by Eric Ries.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. And what is one of your favorite quotes?
It's by Dave Chappelle. He says something along the lines, you cannot compromise compassion for conviction. Hmm. You can still love someone by staying true to who you are. Something around that.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's the first time a comedian has been quoted. But I remember when he said that. I remember thinking that was quite profound.
Yes.
What is one internet resource or app that you couldn't live without?
My Instagram account. Hmm. Yeah. It's my library. The people that I follow are people that I learn a lot from.
Hmm. Nice. And what do you do to unwind from a hectic schedule?
So I live in Mauritius, and I have access to the beach. So I go to the beach often.
Nice. And to close out the rapid fire round, do you feel like you've made it yet?
I feel like I have very many years to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So as we cool down, you mentioned a book earlier in the rapid fire round, but what is one book that you would recommend to the bandits?
It's a book by Peter Thiel. It's called 0 to 1.
Mm, yeah.
And the reason why is because he talks about how to push the human race forward. And that's, I feel, what your audience is really striving to do every day.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. And what would you say is the general value you receive from mentorship, and who are your mentors?
So I wasn't really fortunate enough to get one-on-one mentors who I know personally. But we live in a connected world where anyone that you look up to can actually be your mentor. And what I learned from these people that I aspire to be is that they're all human. Like, we all face the same existential issues as humans. And that thought just makes me feel like anything is possible. Because if they can do it, I also can do it.
Mm. Nice. And so what advice would you give to some of those people who are listening who, for one reason or another, they're afraid of taking that next step to entrepreneurship? It could be maybe feeling inadequate or feeling a little too young or a little too inexperienced. What advice would you give to those people?
So what I tell them is to picture themselves at 80 or 90 years.
Mm.
And then they should pose the question to themselves. They should ask themselves, what is it that I regret never doing? Mm. And then that answer is always that one lingering thought that we need to do something. So for you not to get there where you regret not doing something, just do it now. It's better to do it and fail than to never do it and never know the outcome.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thought that many people might have is that if I start something and it fails, then I would have wasted all of this time. But the important thing to realize is that whatever you're doing, if you're putting an honest effort into it, you're going to receive some sort of experience along the way. You're going to receive some sort of information that is valuable to one person or another. I mean, I've known of people who've started businesses that have failed, and their fallback became jobs at Google or jobs at Facebook. So, I mean, the thing is, people take notice of your efforts, and it's all a learning experience along the way. So, hopefully that sort of quells that, that thought in your mind.
Exactly. And the book I'm reading right now talks about the fact that whatever plan that you have right now as a young founder is definitely going to fail. So the book is all about learning how to go through 10 steps until you find the one that really works for your company.
And so being an entrepreneur in Kenya, I'm sure it might come with some challenges that are unique to that location, but also you said you're in Mauritius now. So what are some of the challenges that you have being where you are, and what are some of the prescriptions you have for people who might be doing something similar to what you're doing?
One challenge that I can think about right now is if you come from a country like Kenya that has a really big Western influence, you'd realize that most people want to associate themselves with what's foreign and what's Western. And if you start a local brand, people hardly buy into it because there's all this Western brands in the market. Yes, but I've learned how to navigate that perception rather than changing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, I think you've definitely given some great insight, and it's kind of cool just to speak with someone pretty young, just to see what it's like for them, what it's like from a different perspective. And I'm sure that a lot of people have also appreciated learning from you as well. So as we say goodbye, what are some ways that people can connect with you through email, Twitter, website, all of that stuff?
Instagram.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm always on my Instagram, and I actually reply to people that message me. Yes.
Okay, cool. And what are some parting pieces of advice and wisdom that you can give to the Bandits right before we say goodbye?
So I believe that the Bandits want to do good for humanity. So one parting piece of advice is, you know, let's go out there and dent the universe.
Yeah. Nice. Well, Alex, it's been a pleasure speaking with you for these last 40 minutes or so. I definitely appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule to sit down and talk with us. I appreciate it. I'm sure the Bandits appreciate it as well.
All right. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Yeah.
A pleasure.
Stay inspired.
Hey, if you're still there, thanks for listening. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Handle is Knowledge Bandits everywhere. We have closed sessions lined up with some of the entrepreneurs that we've already interviewed. So if you have questions that weren't answered during the show, you'll have a chance to connect with them during these closed sessions. Just go to the Knowledge Bandits website at knowledgebandits.com and sign up for the newsletter on the contact page. If you or someone you know has a business, we'd love to share your story with the Knowledge Bandits community. Just send an email to interview@knowledgebandits.com. If you have a question for me or you want to connect with any of the guests so far, send an email to me personally at arum@knowledgebandits.com.
Stay inspired.